Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tulsa World Opinion video podcast this week. And I am joined with Dr. Michael LaPaula, whom I've known for many years, going back to when he was a researcher in healthcare at OU Tulsa. And he is here to talk about an op-ed to commemorate Memorial Day, which is Monday. So welcome. I'm glad to see you and catch up with you.
Good seeing you, Jenny.
So I haven't kept up with you in a while. So the last I talked to you, you were doing consultant work. So do you mind telling a little bit about what you're doing now? I know you're at retirement age, but you're the kind of guy that never really truly retires from anything. So what are you working on right now?
The last time you saw me, I was retired from the JOB, but I was doing a little bit of consulting work. And I quickly found out that being paid for consulting work wasn't very satisfactory. So I've learned that get involved in things that you don't get paid for, and it's a lot more satisfying. So I've been volunteering my time. Well, I think the last time we really saw each other was 5 years ago, I guess. We sat down, you know, over some coffee. So I've been involved in the school choice movement in Oklahoma. I've been involved on the board of a couple of scholarship programs and an online virtual charter school. And I've been active with the Oklahoma Military Heritage Foundation, and all those things, you know, all together keep you busy enough.
Certainly. Well, the op-ed that you submitted, and for people who haven't been keeping up with you, you usually do submit quite a bit of writing on veterans and military, and I know I appreciate it. And this is an interesting one because you focus on the hymn "Mansions of the Lord," which I admit, I thought it was an old traditional from the 19th century, and because it sounds that way, but what you're saying, what you found is it's not so. So I'm just curious, when was the first time you heard that hymn, and then what made you decide to go look up more about it?
Well, I've heard it over the years, but to me, it was sort of in the background. It was a nice song. I didn't understand the background of it. You know, it sort of came and it sort of went. I was curious about it because it came from a movie in 2002 that I really liked. But for the life of me, I can't think back to the movie and remember the music in the background. So anyhow, it was always there. I always knew it was Mansions of the Lord, but I never knew the origin until probably 3 years ago. My brother-in-law, is my classmate from West Point. And he passed away, and we had a full honors service for him at Arlington Cemetery. And the service began with the Army band playing Mansions of the Lord. And if you could have seen the setting and the people, for example, our class was a centennial class of the Civil War for 1965, and it was 1865. And the funeral service was literally in the shadows of the Arlington House, Robert E. Lee's home that was confiscated to make Arlington Cemetery. So all these things are going through my mind, and all of a sudden, out pops this Mansions of the Lord played by the Army Band. And it was so moving that I went home and I said, I thought I knew where this came from. Let me find out. And so it didn't take very much research to find out where it came from. And ever since, I've been fascinated with it as a hymn, simply because it's 20 years old. It's not 200 years old. So that was the origin of the interest.
It surprised me because it has, and you mentioned in there that, and maybe this is the key to it, it was sung by the West Point Glee Club. Is that correct? Yes.
Correct.
I think that adds to it. I mean, it has that that old feel to it. It's beautiful. So
that was why they were selected. I think they.
Well, were you in the Glee Club? Were you a West Point singer?
No,
you were not.
I befriended. It's a long story. I befriended the director of the Glee Club probably about 12 years ago, and when I started researching Mansions of the Lord and found out how the Glee Club was so involved, I contacted her. And actually, I had lunch with her 3 weeks ago, and she told me this whole story. And then so the detail to me was fascinating. The people involved were fascinating. And then, of course, if you ever see the recessional at the Reagan funeral, just have a box of tissues. It's the Mansions of the Lord with the Marine Corps Band, the Armed Forces Chorus, the National Cathedral, every head of state in the world. And it was just majestic, just unbelievable. And it's online, you know, it's in YouTube, you can find it. So anyhow, I just think that when we're talking about a Memorial Day column, I think Memorial Day is very hard for people to figure out what to do. And this is what I said in the column. You know, they wake up, it's Memorial Day, now what do I do? Well, you know, you can't go to grandma's house, and you can't get on a plane, and you can't go to a picnic. And well, it's really a day of reflection more than activity, if you get what I mean.
Right.
And there's no better way to reflect than to a hymn like this. It doesn't take long, and it just makes you think and appreciate, and you've done your duty.
And the lyrics are moving. And like, I mean, Taps, everyone cries. It's just, you know, you hear that, everyone knows it. It's the universal hymn that we hear at funerals. This adds another dimension to it where the lyrics are really moving. And I agree. And I agree with you that it's, and you had mentioned that it's becoming more popular in solemn military services as well. So you're hearing.
Well, I believe it is the go-to hymn in any meaningful military memorial service or burial or concert or things of that nature. Yeah. In 20 years, it's sort of jumped past. In 20 years, it's sort of caught up with the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Mm-hmm. And the Battle Hymn of the Republic, I think this is better than that one. I
do too. The Battle Hymn of the Republic is louder, it's more assertive, it's more jaunty and all that business. Mansions of the Lord is more reflective and solemn and the rest. But the thing is, I think they swim in the same light. And they could be bookends depending on what your purpose is for honoring those who served or the military in general.
You mentioned that you were a West Point graduate, and most people around here know you kind of post-military as a healthcare researcher, as school choice advocate, but I don't know that much about your military service. You mm-hmm. mentioned in the op-ed at the end that you were in the battle of, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Y Dranh, is that right?
Y Dranh.
And that's what the When We Were Soldiers, the movie and came from the book, was based on. Mm-hmm. So, and that was news to me. All these times I've known you. Can you just talk a little bit about what was your service? You graduated from West Point in 65. Did you go right over into Vietnam, or what was your path?
Well, you know, to unwind for a moment, the movie was about a battalion of the 1st Air Cavalry Division that deployed to Vietnam in 1965 and served in the Y Dranh Valley until the summer of 66. And when they got there, they got involved in what is called the Battle of the Y Dranh Valley. Now, my unit went in and replaced them. And so I served a year in the Y Dranh Valley, and the firefights and engagements we had were in the Y Dranh Valley. So I associate with the Y Dranh. I mean, as a young man, that was very important to me. And I know when I went, I saw the movie, I came home and I told my wife, I just saw it myself, came home and told my wife, I said, they got it right. They got the Army wives' hairdos. They got the what they wore. And one thing they got right, and this, people are going to find this impossible to believe, but in 1965, if you were killed in Vietnam, the Defense Department sent a telegram to Western Union, who gave it to a taxi cab driver, who handed the telegram to the widow.
I mean, like a cab driver would be the one to break the news?
Exactly. Well, the cab driver would hand the telegram and walk away. That was the method at that time. Now, the hero of the movie was a guy named Colonel Hal Moore. And his wife, when he deployed over, His wife saw this going on, and she personally crusaded to change it and to professionalize it. And so all that was correct. I mean, all these things were 1965, and they were just historically accurate. So I came over and I told my wife, I said, you know, they got this thing right. And then I looked up the author of the book, and he and Hal Moore had an agreement that Moore would cooperate on the book if the author got it right. Well, as it turned out, the author was with Hal Moore in the Battle of the Adrian, and the author got it right. So ever since then, I've always said to people, that's the way it was. You know, warts and all, that's the way it was. So yes, I did spend a year in the Adrian Valley. I was with the Army Infantry. I was a CO of a Ranger unit, and we did our duty and came home. When I came home, I was, first when I was over there, I was dating a girl, and we agreed if I got back, we'd get married. So she was from North Dakota, so I applied for an ROTC assignment in North Dakota, and in Army fashion, they sent me to South Dakota, which was close enough. So we got married. I spent 2 years teaching ROTC in 1968 and 9 in the University of South Dakota. And people say, oh, that must have been just horrible. You know, during those years on the university, I have never been treated so well in my life. It was, maybe it was the part of the country, maybe it was the university. Everybody treated us well. It was a real pleasant experience. And then the Army said, you know, Mike, you really hadn't had enough, so we're going to send you back for a second tour. So I went back for a second tour, and I was a military advisor to the 1st Arvin Division, far north Vietnam. And then I came home, and I was stationed at Fort Carson for a few years, and that I said, you know, my next promotion is 13 years from now. It was fish or cut bait time, so I cut bait, and I went to Trinity University, got a master's degree in healthcare administration, and was recruited out of that program to help establish the medical school here in Tulsa back in the early, in the middle 70s. So about 15 of us were assembled, and we were said, we were given the order, start a medical school. Well, how much money do we have? Well, not much. Where's the blueprint? Well, we don't have a blueprint. It was one of those deals. But it was a heck of a ride, you know, with the University of Oklahoma Medical School, which led to this, which led to that, which led eventually to retirement.
Yeah, there's a whole other podcast to be had on how Tulsa ended up with a medical school. So
I can
come back for that.
I can talk to you about that from the ground up.
Well, but I figure if you're coming out of a war zone, that's probably good training for the political needs of setting up a university medical school in Tulsa. So
you know, you're not far off. I mean, it wasn't that everybody wanted you around, but it's a long, interesting story. Mm-hmm. And you know, Jenny, as I look back upon my life, the only things I've ever done well have been startup things. Mm-hmm. Like when I was in Vietnam, I was asked to start up a Ranger reconnaissance outfit. No one had ever had one before, so I had to make it up as I went. And then when I came here to Tulsa, it was a startup medical school. There was no cookbook. You had to make it up as you go. I was recruited by the Oklahoma Medical Research Foundation to start a Center for Health Policy Research. Well, I didn't know what that was. I mean, it was a startup. You had to start it up. So, and there are several things along the way, but everything I've done well has been a startup. And I've liked that in retrospect.
It's an interesting life you've led. And one of the things that you've always seemed like you've always been involved in is the Oklahoma Military Hall of Fame. And you've been a good friend to us and always letting us know who's going in. And you write marvelously about the inductees and just really keeping that front and center for everyone. So how did you get involved in that? And what are some of the things, kind of the process of the Military Hall of Fame? What are some of the things that you're involved with that organization?
Yeah, well, good open-ended question. I didn't know very much about the Military Hall of Fame until 2000 and 13, 2014. And a group of us West Pointers in Tulsa said, you know, there's this thing called the Military Hall of Fame, and we need to nominate General Croucher. He's one of our members. I don't have enough time to tell you his background. It's just endlessly fascinating and accomplished. And so, well, who's going to nominate him? Well, raised my hand. I said, I'll write the nomination. So I wrote the nomination and I sent it in, and they called me and they said, well, you know, we select 10 people a year, and General Croucher was ranked first. So that's pretty cool. So we went to the induction banquet and did all that. And then the next year, I said, well, we need to nominate this guy over here. So I nominated him and he got accepted. I nominated like four in a row and they all got accepted. And so I became more familiar with the people involved and eventually wound up on the board. And I enjoy it because it's not an all year thing. But the people you meet are just first class people.
You moved it around. Didn't you have some things like at a high school last year? It seems like you guys have done some different things with the induction ceremony.
Last year, because of COVID, we couldn't really have a banquet to induct the Hall of Fame inductees for the last couple of years. So what we decided to do was have smaller decentralized induction ceremonies. And there was one person that was going into the Hall of Fame 2 years ago. His name was General McLean. And I said, you know, guys, McLean High School in Tulsa was named after him. Well, nobody knew that. So I said, why don't we arrange for the induction to be at McLean High School? And long story short, that's what we did. I contacted the high school, I contacted the principal, the head of the ROTC, and they said, hey, let's do this. The last day of school, we have an award ceremony, and the families come, and the kids are there, and all that kind of thing. Why don't we start off our award ceremony by you inducting General McLean into your Hall of Fame? So we did that, and we put the medal around the neck of the principal, and we gave her the certificate, and all that kind of a thing. So it was a fun deal. And I think you might remember, that's when I wrote a column for the paper saying everybody knows who Will Rogers is and Thomas Edison and Daniel Webster, but nobody knows who McLean is. And I asked people today, so do you know who McLean High School is named? No, I don't know. So well, look on their website. And actually General McLean was inducted into the Oklahoma Hall of Fame in 1954. Hmm. School was built in 59 and then named after him. But anyhow, that was, I think that's what you were talking about.
Well, yeah. And I remember it because of your column. But with every one of those that you write, you would just, these people who live among us that we don't know that background. It's fascinating. And some of the heroism that we have in Oklahoma and in our among our military veterans is astounding to me.
It really is. I remember, 3 years ago, I nominated the General Roscoe Cartwright and a guy named Specialist Fourth Class Joe Thomas. Both graduated from Washington High School, one in 1936, one in 1965. A segregated high school for both of them. Okay. Joe Thomas became the highest decorated Tulsan Army soldier since World War II, and General Cartwright is the second Black general in the history of the United States Army. And there it is, Washington High School. But a neat thing happened after all of that. We inducted him at OSU Tulsa on the outside pavilion. And then we raised the money and fabricated a beautiful memorial to both of these men at Washington High School. So we worked with the principal of the high school to make sure that they wanted it. And then if they wanted it, to make sure they wanted what we had in mind in terms of and they liked all that stuff. So the people that sponsored, that exhibit cost probably maybe $10,000. The alumni of the United States Naval Academy, the alumni of West Point and OSU Tulsa, the three of them co-sponsored that exhibit. It was a nice deal.
How do you meet these people? I mean, is it just veterans? kind of flock to each other? I mean, because I know that, or do you just naturally know? I know that you know a lot of people, but.
Well, we have folks on our Hall of Fame board and in the Hall of Fame that they're just inveterate researchers. They're always looking at databases of people who won the Medal of Honor and where they're from and who got decorated. They read all kinds of military. So in the case of Cartwright, I got a phone call from a guy in Yukon. He said, hey, this General Cartwright's the real deal. So a friend of mine put me on to Cartwright. And so that's how you find these people. I mean, you can't hang out.
Sort of just people, veterans, people who know them, reaching out and saying.
Yeah, yeah. People combing history. I'll give you a perfect example. This year, there's going to be a fellow nominated that if he's not the top honoree, I'm gonna just have a stroke. His name is John Clark. They call him Jocko. And he was an admiral in the United States Navy. He was born in Oklahoma Territory of Cherokee parents. He was the first Native American to attend and graduate from the United States Naval Academy. He became a hero in the Pacific and a hero in the Korean War. And they named ships after him. They named buildings after him. I mean, this guy is the real deal. No one had ever thought to nominate him. For what reason? Wow. Now, probably he didn't have any family in Oklahoma left. He had no people that served with him back in, you know, World War II. So the only way you know about him is like in history books. And so you're reading some account of something and all of a sudden, oh, so-and-so is from Oklahoma. Well, you start asking the next question, where are they from? Do they have family and things of that nature? So a purpose of the Hall of Fame group is to identify people like that, find them, you know, go out and find them. And you don't find them by sitting at a bar listening. I mean, you got to go and do
it's
some
an research. Active search. Now, yeah. I thought you'd mentioned to me earlier that there is going to be a hall of honor, or
yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Our Hall of Fame has a very, very high bar to be selected to it. And an awful lot of good people are not selected. So every year we select 10 of the best nominations and they're inducted into the Hall of Fame. And so I asked the question a couple of years ago, well, what do we do with number 11 and number 12? Well, we don't do anything. You know, they kind of sent them a letter saying, well, they didn't make it. And so it seems to me we have an awful lot of people worthy of an honor, maybe not the Hall of Fame level, but certainly a significant honor. So I worked with the general in our organization, and we just created this Hall of Honor concept. And for every person inducted into the Hall of Fame, we hope to induct 20 into the Hall of Honor.
Okay.
And we hope to establish chapters around the state where the chapters will identify people in their region that are worthy of a Hall of Honor recognition. So right now we're planning some pilot chapters in Northeast Oklahoma, in Tahlequah with the Cherokee Nation, in Tulsa with the VFW, in Bartlesville, Stillwater, and we've established our first chapter out in Enid. And the only purpose of these chapters, small group, very flexible, they operate, they have their own little meetings. All they have to do is find nominees for the Hall of Honor. And so we think it's going to take off really well. And now that you've asked, we're making our very first Hall of Honor presentation tomorrow in Tulsa.
And tomorrow being Wednesday for people who
day after tomorrow, Thursday.
Thursday, so on Thursday.
Yep.
In Tulsa, where in Tulsa?
It's going to be at the Kirk of the Hills.
Okay.
And this is a 100-year-old World War II veteran that was one of the very first people to land on D-Day and went all throughout Europe to the end of the war. He's Choctaw Indian. He now lives in Owosso. And anyhow, he was identified by some people in Enid and nominated for the Hall of Honor. And we said, we're gonna induct him this week, and that's what we're gonna do.
Are you at a point? Can you tell us his name, or is it an announcement to be made later on?
Well, we'll make it on Thursday.
Okay. Give people something to tune into later.
I'm gonna send Tim the info.
Okay, Tim, that's Tim Stanley, who is wonderful. Tim Stanley, our reporter, has written all of our veteran stories. He did the profile. Yeah,
you ask about where do you find these people? Well, the very first place we look is Tim Stanley's archives.
It's amazing what he's able to find. And you're right. What happens is people will read about it, and then they know someone, and it just grows. Right. And so there is a community that sort of comes together and to watch out for our veterans. Right. But in sort of coming back around to Memorial Day, you're right. It is one of those days where you're not sure how to commemorate it. It's not to be confused with Veterans Day. And, you know, we have to always remind people this is to honor soldiers who have died while in service. That's why it was founded, you know, after Civil War, Decoration Day. And so I'm just curious, how do you commemorate Memorial Day? What goes through your minds? What do you do on that day?
Well, in the column, I suggested that people could find this kind of music and they can meditate for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, whatever they like to do. And that's a great way to do it. Periodically, my wife and I drive to Fort Gibson National Cemetery, and we just walk through the cemetery and look at gravestones and come home. I mean, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. The last couple of years, we go to a North Cemetery in North Tulsa, where Joe Thomas is, mm-hmm. and walk around and visit Joe and come home. Now, that's because, you know, we know these people, but the average Tulsan isn't really familiar with the Fort Gibson Cemetery, or certainly the cemetery in North Tulsa. So that's why I just offered, just find some great music that's appropriate for Memorial Day and reflect. That's plenty good enough.
I think I'm going to watch When We Were Soldiers. My husband had watched it, loved it, and I just never got a chance to watch it. So now that I know the connection with you in some sort of roundabout way, and you have vouched for the movies and books accuracy, that's going to be what I'll do on Monday. So
I'm glad you said that. That makes me feel good.
So I always, I'll make a point to do that. So I do want to give, I always give the guests kind of the last word. So what are some thoughts that you would like to leave people with today?
Well, now that you said it, I like people to go out and find the movie and go watch it. And then listen to the end credits, and you'll hear Mansions of the Lord. And I think that's a wonderful thing to do.
There you go.
I'll say this about the movie. When I say they got it right, you know, when you're a vet or you've been someplace where the movie is about, then you're a critic. You know, you look at the detail. And I looked at the women's hairdos, the coffees they had, they wore gloves, that kind of business. But also, the Vietnam War introduced the helicopter, you know, into military maneuvers. And they got the helicopters right. You know, it's very easy to get them wrong. They got it exactly right. And they got the Adirondack Valley right. I don't know where they filmed that thing, but it was darn, it looked an awful lot like the Adirondack Valley I knew. So I would encourage you to enjoy that movie. I think that now there's parts of it that are pretty bang bang. And the truth of the matter is, the last time I saw it, I fast forwarded through them. I didn't want to see it myself. But feel free to fast forward. You're not committing sacrilege.
But I will give it a watch. So it's a
great story, and I'll leave you with this one tidbit. Okay. The Colonel Hal Moore is played by Mel Gibson. And Mel Gibson does a terrific job playing Hal Moore. And then to connect all the dots with Mike LaPola, Hal Moore went to West Point, but Mel Gibson was born in the same hospital I was and was brought up in my hometown, a small town in New York, for the first 10 years of his life. So I've always been a Mel Gibson fan. So you got the Adirondack Valley, Mel Gibson, my hometown, Colonel Moore. I'm connecting dots all day. Okay. So I recommend the movie, and I'll ask for a review afterwards.
Well, maybe we should figure out a way to get Mel Gibson to play you in your life story. We'll that'll be our next the next chapter for you. So,
gosh, I'm taller than Mel Gibson is.
Well, thank you very much. I do hope you have a reflective Memorial Day, and I look forward to seeing you again. So, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Jenny. We'll stay in touch.